From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 429, Exchange Online Protection with guest Peter Schmidt, recorded Monday, June 29th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm back with Peter Schmidt, the infrastructure architect and consultant for EGAS in Denmark. Expert in Exchange, been involved in it for years and years and years, been hanging out in the Office 365 space lately. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me online.
And I really appreciated the conversation we had a few months back talking about public folders, because they get maligned. You know, and I, when I work with organizations, they depend heavily on that tech. They just don't want to give it up. Those that use it really use it.
That is true. Yeah, it is.
But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Where do you want to go today, Peter?
Well, we talked about having a chat about the Exchange Online Protection.
So this is anti-spam stuff?
Yeah, it's the anti-spam, anti-malware features of Office 365.
Interesting. So you need to be using 365 to use EOP?
Well, you don't need to sign up for the whole Office 365 package to actually use Exchange Online Protection.
Oh, really?
You can just sign up for that one particular service if that's the only part you actually need.
So this is actually a service for your on-prem Exchange as well?
It would be a service that you would potentially use for your on-prem environment, yes.
Oh, that's cool. Is that a normal practice, or is this just something you normally just use with Exchange Online?
Well, I think most organizations today with on-prem mail systems or on-prem Exchange are already using some kind of cloud-based anti-malware, anti-virus scanning features.
For sure, yeah. I use MailRoute and people use Postini. There's a list of them.
There's tons of them out there. So I guess Exchange Online Protection is just Microsoft's footprint on the whole cloud spamming.
Okay, so services. And not just spam, but also various malware bits and things like that.
Yeah, and some other features as well. So I guess we can cover them.
Let's run it down. What does this thing do exactly?
Well, basically, it's a service you can sign up with. And of course, it helps you protect your users against the basic stuff like the spam and the malware and the viruses.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps keeping your organization secure and eliminate most of the threats you see on email today. Besides that, it also gives you some additional enhancements or features, if you want to call it that. There are some extra features in that service that you can configure mm-hmm. if it fits your organization. Some of them could be the DLP, the data loss prevention feature, for instance.
Okay. So do they keep copies of mail for you?
They don't keep copies of mail. It only scans the mail. The only place or in case that you where you see it keeping a copy of the mail is in case you run into malware, spam mails or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Then it will keep the mail in a quarantine. If that's what you configure it for.
All right. Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, I do find I need maybe once a month or so to go through my spam filter and just figure out, has it caught anything it shouldn't have?
Yeah. So in the case you run your own on-prem Exchange environment as mm-hmm. an organization, you use the Exchange Online Protection or the EOP as it's often referred to, and it catches some of the mails for some of the users. you got two options. You can either sort of tag it in this EOP cloud service, and it ends up in the user's junk mail folder in the on-prem mailbox. In that case, all the mails tagged as spam would still come into the on-prem environment.
Okay. But it will go into the spam mailbox so they can look at it that way.
Yeah. In that case, they can look at it and control it within Outlook as they're used to from a full-blown on-prem environment.
Right.
In case they had a spam appliance box on-prem or something like that. But the other option they also have is that you can enable it to use the quarantine area.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having all the spam mails come into your on-prem Exchange environment, all mails tagged as spam will end up in the quarantine area. So each user can individually see their own quarantine area and go in and release whatever false positives might have ended up in there.
Right. So you're just going onto a web page essentially to get at that?
You can go log into a web page, or you can configure the service to send out a report to the users. And in that report, it will list whatever has been caught within in the system since the last report the users received.
Okay, that makes that. I mean, those are the core functionality there of what I really want from a spam filtering system or a malware filtering system. What about the disaster recovery parts or backup protection?
When you talk about backup protection, what do we really mean?
I guess the big thing is if my on-prem mail server is down, all the mail will get kept. I mean, that's certainly something I count on from MailRoute for me. That they're my proxy for my MX record, so they hold on to that mail until my server comes back up.
Well, as far as I remember, the EOP service can hold your mail for 2 days in case you're on-prem, in the case that your on-prem environment goes down.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is fair. I mean, even then, all it happens is it starts kicking it back to the source, who usually will retry for a couple of days anyway.
That's true. And hopefully most on-prem systems would be up and running again within 2 days.
Yeah. So if you're not, maybe you should be switching to the cloud.
Yeah. You should move all into Office 365 then. That would be a good option.
Yeah. Speaking of that, isn't this a built-in service for a 365 customer?
Yeah, actually it is.
Okay.
So in case you're running either the full package of Office 365 or maybe just the Exchange Online service of 365 where you have your mailbox in the cloud, then you are already protected by the Exchange Online protection.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So really, this sounds like a product for people running on-prem mail that want this level of protection as well, rather than doing it. Like, I have a domain name. The domain name is gh.com, and it gets 5 to 7 spam emails a month, or 5 to 7 million spam emails a month. Because I've had that domain registered since the middle 90s. There are no three-letter domains anymore. I consider it my own portable DDoS attack, because anything that owns that MX record gets hammered. Like, it's brutal. So I'm big on have somebody out there that's taking the initial hit on this and just leaking through the real mails, because there's not that much real mail that goes that domain.
I agree, and that's definitely the benefit for most organizations using a cloud-based service for this.
Mm-hmm.
And EOP, as we mentioned early on, is just one of the services available. I think the benefit of the Exchange Online Protection Service is definitely the price and the point that a lot of organizations running the like enterprise agreements with Microsoft on the licensing part, they actually already have the license to use Exchange Online Protection. So instead of signing up for other third parties, you mentioned Postini, WebSense, there's tons of them out there.
Yeah.
Well, actually, most organizations, or at least a lot of the ones I see in my role as a consultant, actually already have the license to use Exchange Online Protection.
Yes, you may actually own this. You just don't realize it, that it's already there.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah.
That's really funny. And, you know, it's a good point. And if you do have to pay for it, $1 per user per month, is that right?
That is correct, yeah.
Wow, you can't argue with that price tag. I mean, especially if you talk about myga.com domain, like, for my buck a month for that, for one email box, that would be, I am unfairly consuming resources for that price.
Yeah, it's definitely a price point I think most organizations are able to cover at some point.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's just not that much money.
It's not. It's,
does it? Do you have to count all the aliases? Is it? It's
no.
Just,
actually, we are talking users who can log in okay. to a mailbox.
Right.
So, in case you have shared mailboxes, distribution list, or whatever, well, they are just aliases, as you mentioned yourself.
All right. So it's per user who log in, not actually per email address.
No, per user. Yeah,
that's interesting. Correct. So, can you talk anything about what's going on here? How are they doing their filtering? Is it anything special? Is this an on-prem product I could be running anyway if I wanted to run myself?
No, actually, it's well, talking about from the base of the price point and all that, it's a service like any other Office 365 that is in continuous evolvement. So there's no doubt that when this service came out as the EOP or Exchange Online Protection product mm-hmm. about 2 years ago, it doesn't definitely had some missing features compared to some of the major cloud scanning providers in the market. But there's no doubt that with the commitment that Microsoft puts into all these cloud services, the product has really evolved within the last, just look at the features coming into the product the last year or so.
Yeah, it's moving so rapidly. I, who get to do this, you know, most of the time, have a tough time keeping up with the new feature set. Like, it is so constant.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And that's probably one of the, the hassles that we have today is keeping up with all these cloud services, right? So.
Yeah, there's always another product. Well, I guess that's this service we're doing right now. Here's a product you should probably know about. So am I wrong in that in the end, after you get the account and stuff signed up, all it is changing your MX record to point to them?
Yeah, more or less. If we start to, we can just roll back a second. You talked about how it all started and all that.
Yeah.
It actually evolves, and it's a 100% cloud service. You're not able to install any of the bits or anything. Like this in the on-prem. But actually, you used to be able to, because this service was previously known as Forefront Online Protection.
Oh my, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, I agree in that. But it actually goes further back than Forefront. But I think many people or organizations probably know the Forefront services where you are. At that point, you had bits that you could install on-prem for your Exchange servers.
Yeah. Well, there was a point where Forefront was a 1U pizza box you could buy.
That's probably true. I don't remember that part. But
I'm just old, man. That's all it is.
No problem.
So that's where this product went. Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, I think it actually goes further back to it was a service that Microsoft bought up. I think they were named FrontBridge Technologies back in 2005, 2006 or something. Like
right.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And they got acquired by Microsoft.
Yeah.
And then rolled out those products. There was a while there where you could soft install it, or there were third party vendors that sold pre-configured devices, you know, basically network devices for it. It covered a lot of different things. I mean, spam filtering was one part of it, but it was a pretty broad product. And then they just sort of wound down. And now it resurfaces a cloud product.
Yep.
So I did a little searching and I found the news, the press release of Microsoft acquiring FrontBridge, July of 2005. That's 10 years ago. How did we get so old?
It's a long time ago, yeah. and the service is probably not looking anything like it did 10 years ago.
No.
So.
But, you know, neither has the spammer. The spammers have gotten smarter too, right? Like, this is really an arms race. It is.
So to get back at the point where we talk about how this can protect and what you need to do to actually get this up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's a pretty simple service at that point, because it's true, as you mentioned. You need to flip over some MX record to get it up and running. But besides that, you have some initial configuration that you need to get done. You need to have the service know the domains that it needs to scan the mail for.
Right.
You need to set up connectors so it's able to communicate with your on-prem environment. And you need to set up some basic settings. Of course, you can go a long way with a lot of the default, but do yourself a favor and go through some of the settings to tweak so it fits your organization. And when talking about settings, I'm talking about how it handles the spam and the malware.
Where are you actually going to land all that stuff?
Yeah, where would you put it in the quarantine we mentioned before? Or do you want to put it in the junk mail folder? What do you want to do when it's malware? Do you want to delete the mail? Do you want to notify anyone in the organization that you had malware coming in? Settings like that.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Peter, give me 1 second to pay the bills, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RunAsRadio, all one word, at ScriptRock.com/RunAsRadio. So on my side, as the Exchange administrator, am I setting up a smart host to talk to EOP?
Yeah, actually you are. Yeah, that's the way you want to configure the on-prem.
Okay.
To actually treat the EOP service as a smart host.
Which is totally to your advantage, because it means that Exchange actually understands what's on its front end. I mean, this was the same relationship we had with Forefront back in the day.
Yeah, the appliance or the external services mm-hmm. are Forefront, yeah.
Yeah,
That's true.
And then you also
any other spam appliance box for them, that matter.
Yeah, but that also means you can then restrict what IPs you're going to take traffic from in the first place, too. Or I guess that's got to be challenging with a cloud service. How many IPs are going to talk to you?
Yeah, well, the way you probably want to restrict that is on the firewall level.
Right.
That's what I see in most cases anyway. And of course, restrict the on-prem environment in that case, that it only communicates with the EOP service.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get spam from anywhere else, but the EOP service is the one handling all your external communication,
both right.
anything going in, but also all the communication going out from your organization.
And so I'm going to presume that everything is TLS. It's all encrypted connections between my servers and EOP.
Yeah, it's running TLS. You are able to configure it in case you, for some reason, are unable to communicate by TLS. You can configure it not to run by TLS, but that's some of the bits or parts you configure in the connectors that you set up
okay.
the EOP service.
But
of course, it's recommended to use the TLS.
Always, yes. It's just CPU cycles. You've got lots. Do it. Does it require like a public cert, or can you do a self-sign? Like, what are the restrictions on the certifications to make that work?
Well, it would need a public cert on the Exchange environment, because the EOP service needs to know your root CA and all that. So you're not able to sign any certificates by your own
right.
CA organization. So that.
So it does mean spending a little money on a proper cert.
Yeah, but in most cases, you have public certs on the Exchange environment anyway.
Right.
Used for connecting mobile devices, Outlook web app and stuff like that.
So now I'm trying to remember the port numbers for secured SMTP or SSN. Well, which protocol are they using when they're calling into the server?
on the TLS part?
Yeah.
It would be 587.
Right, 587. Is that SMTP? I think so. I'm getting old.
Most parts of the...
I used to memorize all these ports.
Yeah, most of us did, but yeah. It's often just referred to in the documentation as the TLS.
Yeah. Yeah, there's 587, which is the alternative port to 25, which is unsecured SMTP. And then there's 465, which is SMTPS.
Yep.
Okay. And that would be the whole thing is, you know, then on my firewall, I could set, okay, well, I'll only forward 465 to my mail server, but again, I guess I want an IP range or something if I can actually filter that tightly.
Yeah, that's also possible because within the documentation on the TechNet portal, mm-hmm. Microsoft lists all the IP ranges used by the Office 365 services.
Nice.
So you are actually able to narrow it down in your firewall so you know what communication comes from the Office 365.
Yeah, who's actually talking to you? Does EOP authenticate to me with their SMTP connection?
No, it doesn't authenticate, but it kind of validates on the name that you have in the certificate.
Okay.
So, well, could call it authentication in some way, but it's since it's based on the TLS, you need to know the public name of your on-prem environment,
right?
And you need to configure that in the connectors in the UP.
Okay.
So in that case, you know both ends of the cert.
So because they're able to communicate with successfully, that's effectively authentication.
Yeah, in some ways, yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you have hard coded the names in the connection, so
yeah,
you could say it's some way of authenticating that you're talking to the right on-prem environment, right?
Right. It's really, yeah, they can't really be in the middle. It is all encrypted. And that's why I'm thinking, like, you just can't do this without encryption. It's foolish.
Yeah.
You're asking for trouble.
It is. Of course, it depends on the requirements you have, because you can configure it so that it is, you're forcing it to use the TLS. And yeah, in that case, if your connection for TLS breaks in some way, the mail is not delivered to your on-prem users.
Right.
It's queued up in the UP service.
Yeah, and held on.
But you can also configure the connectors so that it will prefer the TLS communication.
Okay.
But in case it breaks, it will still deliver the mails, but now it will just deliver as basic SMTP.
And I'm thinking it's a certificate expiry. Might be a case where suddenly mail's just going to stop if the cert expired.
It could definitely be a certificate error, but right, it could also be someone messing up the firewall or something like that. So, yeah, there could be lots of different scenarios, I guess.
But a port IP filter, even in clear, that's pretty secure if you've done that properly.
It would be. I would think so, too.
That is not exactly what you call an open SMTP relay.
No, not at all. But your exchange server would still handle the mail.
Yeah,
like it's always done. So it will not handle open relay anyway.
Even no,
though you're opening it up.
You're still doing domain filtration. You know, the mails have to be right.
Yeah,
but I still don't want spammers hammering me directly.
Nope, I agree. That's true.
Now, my punishment for having, you know, when I registered that domain, there was no way to secure domain information. I'm on every spammer's list ever for that domain.
Yeah.
And it's essentially unfixable. The domain is broken. But good filtration. It's great to actually have all this stuff test vetted for you. So
that's a benefit, yeah.
When you go through and do all the configuration here, obviously you've got to list what domains. Can you list down to individual email addresses so that it's just automatically junking anybody sweeping a domain for email addresses?
Yeah, in some way, actually, you are doing that because... Mm-hmm. When you start setting this up, you can do it in several different ways. If we take the high level approach to begin with here, you can set it up as a standalone scenario.
Right.
In that case, it would be the EOP service as the only service in the cloud protecting your, let's say, Exchange 2013 environment. It could be 2010. Any on-prem mail server in that case would also be able to be protected by the EOP service.
Right.
And in that case, well, it scans the mail based on the domains you set up for malware, viruses, spam, the most important stuff you want to have checked. If you want to sort of enhance this service, you could install the directory sync, or as its name in the latest it's actually renamed to Azure AD Connect now.
Right.
And it's the service that you actually connect your on-prem AD with the Office 365 service. It's a service where you synchronize your user objects to an Azure AD, which then is used by a lot of these Office 365 services. And in our case, we want to use the mail-enabled objects of our AD. So they are synced out to the Office 365, or the Azure AD, and then we're using the Azure AD in Exchange Online Protection. So when we're doing this, we get all our users, our mail alias, our shared mailboxes, everything out into Exchange Online Protection.
Right.
So Exchange Online Protection knows all our mail addresses.
So I don't have to map them manually. And if I add a new user, they're automatically added to the list. If I remove a user, they're automatically removed. Like, that's a big win.
It's a huge win, yeah. And that service runs every three hours on-prem. So it's not something you need to manage afterwards.
No.
After it's set up.
So do I need, and so now I just have to go through the AD Connect process, which I believe means standing up ADFS.
Yeah, well, actually, if you only use it for, it's through the AD Connect, can also configure the ADFS service, which is the one used to authenticate against any of the cloud services when you log on with your local AD account. But in the case with Exchange Online Protection, you often don't need that part with the ADFS service.
Oh, really?
To log on. Only in the matter if you want the users to authenticate against their cloud quarantine area. In that case, you potentially could have a scenario where it would make sense to use the ADFS.
Oh, okay, so you want to leave, like I would want to leave my junk mail for gu.com up there. I don't want it coming down to the server. There's too much of it. So I leave it up there, but then I want to have that ADFS link to AD Connect so that you could log in with your AD credentials that are on-prem and it'll be able to authenticate for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you could also have a scenario where you implement AD Connect and enable the feature that you sync your password into the Azure AD. In that case, you don't need the ADFS to authenticate you when you log into the quarantine area.
Oh, really?
Because now Azure AD has your password hash out there in the cloud, and
okay,
you're able to log in. That could also be a different scenario of using the AD Connect and all the authentication part in the Office 365 services.
Now, what about adding or removing users? Do I need ADFS for that?
No, the ADFS is only an authentication service.
Okay.
The AD Connect is the service synchronizing your users or your user objects.
Okay.
So in case you are deleting a user or adding a user in the on-prem, well, that user will be synchronized automatically to Azure AD, which is then used by the Office 365 services, just like Exchange Online Protection.
Right.
And the AD Connect will sync every 3 hours. So
that's good enough.
Either you wait 3 hours or you go in and you force it to do the sync.
Okay. So it doesn't sound like this is a reason to stand up ADFS. If you have it, you can use it, but you don't need it to make this work easily.
You definitely don't need it.
Right.
No, it's not a, it's nice to have, but it probably varies from organization to organization how they actually want to implement security on this level.
Yeah. Sure.
But it could also, when you have implemented stuff like the AD Connect and start synchronizing all your users to Azure AD. For some organizations, Exchange Online Protection could be their first step into using the Office 365 services.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm thinking. This is the beginning.
Yeah. Next step could be, well, this service runs great. Let's try out some Exchange Online or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe some of the other Office 365 services. It could be Skype for Business if they're not running any Link or Skype already. And yeah. There's lots of great services as part of the Office 365.
Yeah, no, this is it's an entry drug. You like this, you'll like more. I mean, it is this. It seems like this would be the logical thing to do. I'd want all this set up before I even started moving mailboxes up to Exchange Online.
Yeah, it could definitely be a benefit because looking at this solely, it's a great service
at a great price.
Yeah, definitely at a great price. Yeah,
and certainly there's no other service that will sync AD like this, so that you don't have to manage the logins completely separately or manage the account separately.
No, not at all. That's true. So and they keep innovating on this service as well. So one of the steps is that they recently just released an enhancement for organization running Exchange Online Protection.
Mm-hmm.
So now they released a service called Advanced Threat Protection. It's actually an add-on service that you need to subscribe to for everyone running Exchange Online Protection.
So, what does
so
it
even
do?
Though they keep putting additional features onto Exchange Online Protection, they also come out with these new additional services that you can subscribe to additionally on the side for the EOP. And this EOP service, well, it's actually a service that gives you additional protection for what Microsoft calls unknown malware and unknown viruses.
Hmm.
So it's a step where they use a feature to scan attachment at a different level and make sure that based on the signature and probably the algorithms they have in the system, are able to at some level detect more malicious content.
Interesting.
Yeah, and another part of this service would also be the what they would call real time time of click protection against malicious URLs. So if you get a spam or anything that looks like something valid, where you as the user need to click a link to start some malicious content.
Right.
Well, this service would actually look at these links and make it a safe link. So
they rewrite the link?
Yeah, it will rewrite it. So users are actually warned before taking to this malicious link.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it also gives the admin behind the service some additional reporting on all this. So they can see which users have actually clicked on the link and all that.
Right. So they have a sense of who's checking carefully, who's getting, you know, letting the spam get to them, that sort of thing. That's a good idea. And obviously at an additional fee.
Additional fee. And I can't remember the details, but I think this one is actually $2 per user per month.
Okay. Still not a lot of money, depending on how many users, of course, but it's worth consideration.
It's definitely not a lot of money when you talk about security. But
oh, sure. You only need one ransomware bomb to go off, and you get an idea that this protection software is cheap, cheap, cheap.
Yeah, I agree on that. But in case that you could potentially also have an organization where you know you have users that you need to protect or give additional protection. And in that case, you can
that need to be protected from themselves.
Yeah, probably not from themselves, but like the real time click protection.
Yeah,
where they change the URLs or do the enhanced check on these URLs. Well, you have some users in some organizations that might not be that security aware of the mails they are getting in. And in that case, a service like that would probably be great.
Ah, absolutely. Hey, Peter, this is good stuff. Thanks for bringing us up to speed on it. It's a really interesting idea. You don't have to go online to be able to use some of these services. You could be keeping your mail on-prem and actually have a really great filtering service.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, we just talked about using the service as a solo service. We have not even covered all the hybrid stuff where you also use some of this.
So. Nice. So as you're migrating into the cloud, this continues to do its thing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Peter Schmidt, thanks so much for coming on the show.
No problem. Enjoyed being here.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.